everybody. This is Patrick from Beyond Sunday with a little PSA before this week's podcast. I'm not sure you knew this, but there was a major winter storm all across Texas over the last week. And due to that, the podcast episode we intended to come out on Monday the 15th did not get released. But this is going to be that episode. So in this, you'll hear a couple references to Valentine's Day, and you will not hear us talk about the storm at all. So that'll come next week when we'll get back together in the studio. We'll share our experiences and those of our church and how we saw God at work in the midst of our community in something that was really difficult for many people. Also, if you're interested in making a donation to our Pastoral Discretionary Fund, you can contact us here at Lord of Life Lutheran Church in the Woodlands. This fund goes directly to help those in our community that have been affected by the cold, who maybe had their pipes freeze and burst, who've experienced hardship due to the lack of work or food for their family. And so again, if you're interested in making a donation to that, please contact us at Lord of Life Lutheran Church in the Woodlands, Texas. So without further ado, on with the podcast.
One of my friends told me randomly the other day that when a cat starts to eat you after you die, they go for the cheekbones and the nose first. So you're welcome.
The real question is, how long do they wait?
Yeah. It feels personal when they go for your face first, doesn't it?
Well, that's like, usually exposed, right? That's guaranteed to not have covering.
Sure.
If you take, like, just a long nap, are they going to, like, walk up and be like,
yeah. You wake like up it. And your cat is on your chest staring at you.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm still alive here.
Look, breathing.
Yeah, when you walk in, your cat has his paw on your wrist. Like, yes. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. My cat is keep pushing like fatty, salty snacks my direction
right, yeah.
to make this go quicker. Like, I want you to go before me is right. What my cat's thinking.
Fat him up.
All right, welcome back to Beyond Sunday Podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Nazaroff.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Excellent. Pastor David, how is... kind of quarantine life going?
Yeah, kind of quarantine life is great. In my house, I'm wearing, you know, basically what I wore to bed, which is cool. So basically still in my pajamas, and I'm doing all sorts of things on Zoom. It's great.
Your cat's giving you a little side eye. I'm like,
my cat is for sure giving me that side eye.
This is,
my cat is displeased, to be sure.
Yeah. Or maybe he's hoping, you know, you'll have an early demise and he can, like, get a snack in.
Eyeball in that face.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, so I will be hopefully removed from this in a couple of days. But, you know, no positive test here yet. And we're hoping that that remains to be the case. By time of release, I should be out and about in the world.
We hope so, too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, time of release, it's just right after Valentine's Day.
Let
me ask you, do you have any Valentine's Day plans?
Elise is selling her house for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We are all married, not to one another, so we all, you know.
That was an important clarification.
Yeah, pretty sure nobody understood that already, so that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a first-time listener, I don't know.
Right. That's true, okay.
Yeah.
No, we do not have any significant, but we're not big Valentine's Day people. We're more of the, we like to, you know, show our love all year long. We don't need one day to try to say, oh, I'm going to make up for everything else, so.
You believe that men are capable of disappointing women 365 days a year?
I do, absolutely. So why should I live out that dream just on one day?
That's right.
Me neither. Plus, like, trying to do, like, buy flowers and stuff like this, they jack those prices way up for Valentine's Day.
That's the complaint.
It is.
Can't buy flowers.
A dozen flowers 2 weeks ago. Perfectly reasonable.
$10, right? Yeah.
Yeah, now it's like $50 for a dozen flowers. Oh. They jack it way up. I mean, like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, we, you know, like, we'll probably, you know, look, it's quarantine time, so we'll probably, like, order food and watch TV. It's probably what we're going to do.
That sounds great.
We'll probably make a special dessert, probably involving chocolate, because who doesn't love chocolate? But, you know.
Special dessert.
Like a cake or a, I don't know, something like that. Brownies.
Okay.
Who doesn't love brownies? I love brownies.
Everybody loves brownies.
One of the things you could do.
We will not make special
articles
brownies.
Today. One of my news articles today is to go to Lowe's. They are renting out some of their stores for couples to come into the store overnight for a night of Lomance is what they want to call it.
I would literally rather die. To my spouse who's listening to this, I would rather die.
No, you're about to become new homeowners. You're going to need that Lowe's time. You're going to need
Doesn't matter.
You all have your own area. You get to like build something together paint. You know, you could do that. Take it home. They have wine and chocolates for you.
Or champagne. We can scream at each other over home improvement projects at home.
We can do this in the privacy of our own home. We don't need to go right. to this.
And they did say on their website, it's not just couples. First dates can go there, too. Can you imagine your first date?
Yeah.
Let's go to Lowe's.
Yeah.
That's a way to separate the wheat from the chaff right there.
I'll just say this. If you're going on a first date on Valentine's Day, you have already taken a gross misstep. That is not a first day night. You are already...
Rookie mistake. Yeah. Yes.
There could be worse places to take a first date. Probably like an IKEA or something.
Right. You know,
like...
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the low man's at IKEA. That's a rough night right there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so but that's an option. I guess probably at time of release it's over, but maybe you know next year.
Yeah, who knows?
Or really, you could have Lomance all year round, right?
You could. Right. You don't need to just show your Lomance one day. I think you know you can take any day of the year can be Lomance, right? You can take in your bottle of wine and your chocolates into your favorite Lowe's store and just sit down and start building things. I'm sure that Lowe's will support you in your effort. That'll be just fine. Yeah.
Let's build something together is their motto. So that could be
that sounds
a relationship.
Yeah.
Let's build a home together.
Yeah, let's build a home in this home improvement store right here. Let's do that.
Yeah. There you go. I have one other story for us here before we get on to our main story. Did y'all watch the Super Bowl? At time of recording, it's a week old, but
I did not watch a single second of it. And this is the first time in years that I have not. Yeah.
The Buccaneers won.
They did.
So, yes.
So, good for them. Way to go, Tampa Bay.
To Tom Brady, 43 years old. And
all the other players of the Buccaneers, right? Not just Tom
Brady. Right.
No, I couldn't name a one, but congratulations to all the other people.
There you go.
But usually, if you're not a football fan, you're watching the Super Bowl for the commercials.
Sure. Yeah. And or the halftime show. But Yes.
So, I saw this the next day. Evidently, at Super Bowl 2021, the Church of Scientology had a Super Bowl commercial.
Wow. What'd they throw in their Super Bowl commercial? I did not see this.
I watched it. I watched the 2-minute version of him, which is a minute and 55 seconds longer than I wanted to. But,
Wait, is this going to be you telling us that you've converted to Scientology? Because we need to have a different conversation. And that probably should happen off mic. I'm just going to say
that. That would be a unique perspective to bring to the podcast. Yes.
Look, I watched a YouTube 1 2-minute commercial.
Yeah.
And I'm in.
Yes, a 30-second Scientology commercial aired during the Super Bowl, which is odd. But it started with kind of images from 2020 that were tough, like pandemic, stock market crashes, things like that.
Sure.
Anxiety and fear-based work. And then ends with it's narrated saying, it's time to rediscover your hope, your purpose, your passion, your potential, you. Because no matter what we face, nothing is stronger than the human spirit.
And you know, you could have easily put the United Methodist Church at the end of that, and it would have worked just as well.
Oh, yeah, you didn't want to go with the Lutheran Church. The Lutheran Church would definitely not be...
Yeah, we don't advertise this.
Word of mouth only.
Halfway through the commercial, word of mouth is pushing it. I found this one interesting here. The narrator does say, some will doubt you, let them. Dare to think for yourself. I'll be honest. Any religious organization saying dare to think for yourself is already should be a little bit tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. But this Church of Scientology saying dare to think for yourself, join us, is kind of, we're getting a really like, do you know what you're about kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Was it narrated
by Tom Cruise? I haven't heard this, but that's the only Scientology.
It was not narrated by Tom Cruise, unless he's doing a wonderful different voice. I mean, look, maybe he's a great actor.
Who knows? Is he even a Scientologist anymore?
Isn't he? Once you're a Scientologist, you're like not allowed to leave. That's like rule number one.
Well, I think Katie Holmes left.
Katie Holmes left. Yeah,
but that was a big thing.
A recent article in Vanity Fair about her leaving and her marriage to Tom Cruise. It was really interesting. And I have watched the Leah Remini. She was also a Scientologist. She put out like a Going Clear. Our series that just had a new set of series about people who've left Scientology kind of giving their stories for her on Netflix.
Okay.
I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, I need to watch that.
You definitely should. Because when you watch that series, you're going to definitely not walk away with, like, those Scientologists, they value thinking for yourself.
Right.
That is not present.
As per their Super Bowl commercials.
Like, again, every religious organization, look, Christians, yep. We follow a book that's written 2,000 years ago and use that as a basis for how we perceive life today. So I'm not saying, like, Christianity is, like, saying, like, we should think for ourselves. And that's, like, a motto that we hold on to. But Scientology is, like, taking that to, I would say, an extreme.
Yeah.
Yes. It did not sway me to become a Scientologist, but I am impressed that they had $1 million to drop on a Super Bowl commercial. Maybe next year the Lutheran Church could do one.
With all those free thinkers that donated everything.
Yeah, because we definitely have $1 million to drop on a Super Bowl commercial, for sure.
Lord of Life, let's get on this. Yeah. We've got a year.
We've definitely got our entire annual budget that we can just drop on one 30-second
Super Bowl. Yeah, well, it can be our next capital campaign.
There you go.
Super Bowl commercial.
Yes. What should be included in a Lutheran commercial that would really want to get people, you know, more excited about the Lutheran faith?
Hmm.
Potlucks?
Yes, I think the anecdote from Martin Luther about how break wind to scare the devil away would be a great place
to start. That's a good one. Yeah, we could start.
Yeah.
It's my personal favorite.
Hey, honey, just scared away the devil. When, right. For a night of romance, there might probably be a lot of scaring away the devil.
Yeah.
I've been in a Lowe's. Those dudes are scaring away a lot of devils. Right. So
out here doing the most.
I don't even have a response to this. I'm just going to let that roll. We're just going to keep going.
All right, let's get on with our main story this evening, all about the South.
Woo!
Yes, so Elise and I
are we talking about, like, Antarctica? Penguins? What are we...
No, the southern part of the United States.
Oh, okay. I just feel like we should clarify what we mean by the South for our global listeners.
Everybody but you knows, so...
If you're in the South, you knew what we meant by the South, just so we're clear. Yeah. And if you grew up here, you knew that that's what we're talking about.
There is only one South, okay?
Yikes. Okay, this is going to be fun.
So this is, I think, important for us because Elise and I were born and raised in the southern part of the United States.
You know, I will say this just up front is I don't consider Texas to be the South.
Okay.
Because she's a true southerner from South Carolina.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I consider Texas to be the Southwest.
Southwest. Okay. Yeah. Wow. All right. But all of us currently
reside
in Texas.
In Texas, yeah.
So I would say we are part of the South.
Okay. That's fair. You can think that.
You can be wrong. That's fine. That's
dare to think for yourself.
All right. So this this is from David French, friend of the podcast. We've used his writings before. He is a conservative lawyer who runs a Christian, like, news-ish or commentary website.
Yeah.
And so this is from his blog on there. I like reading his blog. I think he is, although I am not, would not consider myself neither conservative nor a lawyer.
Good disclaimer. I am not a lawyer.
I'm prepared to represent myself in any kind of court case. But,
are you?
I watch Legally Blonde.
Yes, but I do find his perspective interesting, and he often has good commentaries on Christianity as a whole. And I found this article extraordinarily interesting. So the headline is, "Where does the South end and Christianity
Louisiana,
begin?"
Texas border.
Look. If you're going to say the Dallas is not part of the South, I'm with you. But, you know, down here in Houston, we're there. Okay. So
I'm
understanding,
with you, Elise. I get it.
Thank you.
The subheadheading, understanding the role of shame, honor, culture in the roots of Christian rage.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Pastor David, you grew up in Ohio.
I did.
So not part of the South, but now you
not by any standard are we part of the South. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of questions about how your experience growing up was different because I've never lived anywhere aside from South Southwest.
Let me tell you about the glorious things that happen when you're raised in Ohio. Let me just give you all of
them. Is that a short list?
No.
I'm just saying, I was born in Texas. I still live in Texas. Y'all two moved. So, I mean, like...
Hey, some of us follow God's call wherever God... Whenever wilderness
y'all
God calls us
came to me.
Into,
I don't know. I'm not going up to Ohio or South Carolina. Y'all came to me.
Yeah.
So, regardless of what you think... I will find your perspective on a lot of these things very interesting, and Elise and I might have a more similar background or understanding.
Yeah,
I find my perspective to be interesting on most things, so I imagine I will find it to be interesting today, too.
All right, so in the article, it opens kind of like this idea of, like, he finds it troubling And the danger when American Christianity becomes too Republican, and I would agree with that.
Sure.
Maybe for different reasons. But he also is going to say there's a danger in American Christianity becoming too Southern.
Mm, okay.
And I find this is kind of an interesting...
Well, bless his heart.
Yeah, here, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
See,
you're getting
on.
It.
Yeah.
And I find this is kind of an interesting thing, because first we have to talk about, like, Southern culture, and then we're going to talk about Christianity in the South, and we'll kind of go over these things.
Okay.
So first, he has this idea of, like, shame, honor, culture that is prevalent in the South that may not be as prevalent in Northern or Western parts of the country.
Or Southwestern parts, depending on...
After reading this article, I think... I can identify with this somewhat.
Sure.
Maybe Elise has a stronger identification with some of these things.
I do, yeah.
All right, so first we have to define that, right? Like, define what is a shame, honor, culture.
I mean, shame, honor, culture is go back generations. Right? I mean, ancient Israel was an honor, shame culture. I mean, if you're reading the text from the Old Testament and things like that, even in the New Testament, you're reading about a culture which exists in this understanding of honor and shame as kind of almost like a tradable commodity, that, you know, when you're living in your community, there is an amount of honor that can be bestowed to you and your family. You can't just claim honor, but it's bestowed upon you by the community because of things that you do. And similarly, that honor can be removed, and or you can receive shame because of things that you do. So we talked about this with Ruth and Boaz, right? There was an amount of honor that Boaz would receive from the community for taking in Ruth and her mother and being the kinsman redeemer. There's an amount of honor that is a part of that process. And likewise, you know, for him to say, oh no, I'm just going to kick you to the curb, I'm going to ignore you, there would have been shame that would have gone along with that. So that culture has been around for thousands of years and is still very prevalent, especially in Eastern Asian countries. You know, China has a huge honor shame understanding, Japan as well. My understanding, South Korea also is big in India, in Middle Eastern countries. Within the Islamic community, this is still a very big thing as well. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's out of fashion, but it's lessened in lots of parts of kind of Western Europe and into the United States. But it's very, very prominent and, like, openly prominent. I think it's kind of, from my experience, it's more unspoken. Like, it's the water that we're all swimming in when we're talking about Southern culture a little bit, but it's not, like, named. But in other cultures, it's still very much named. And it's like, oh, yes, you're bringing shame on the family, or you're bringing honor to the family in this thing.
Yeah, you may not have, like in Mulan.
Right.
Like, the idea.
Yeah, you'll bring, like, honor to us all.
Or sing a song with the dragon.
A family might say, you have brought dishonor to my family.
Yeah.
But this is still present. So
yep, absolutely.
This we'll just say they're bad people in the South. They're not good people.
So I think this is a good definition that he provides as well.
Did you just say all the people in the South are bad people? Because I think we need to clarify that.
No. I just said in the South, instead of saying you brought dishonor,
Your
family will say they're bad people.
I got you. Yeah. Yeah, because the question always is, who are your people, right? And are you good people, or are you bad? Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
So his definition that he'll kind of give here is going to be, in a guilt culture, you know you are good or bad by what your conscience feels.
Okay.
In a shame culture, you know you're good or bad by what your community says about you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whether it honors or excludes you.
Yep.
In guilt culture, people sometimes feel they do bad things. In shame culture, social exclusion makes people feel they are bad.
Yeah.
So yep. It
that kinda, external rubric.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a little scarlet letter action here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It has an external rubric of, like, this is who you are based on how your community feels about you.
Yep.
And then it can't in the shame honor culture, that sense of shame and your identity are linked completely together. Or the sense of honor and your identity are linked together. So that means if you feel shamed by your community, who you are is bad.
Yeah.
If you're honored by a community, who you are is good.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, that's just kind of what it kind of permeates to the core. So let's start there. Pastor David, you kind of gave us a good introduction to this as well. But Elise, you grew up in the real South, South
the
Carolina.
The real South, that's right.
Do you experience this? Is this part of how you would grow up, in this kind of culture?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not explicit. I think David said this, but it's really not explicit. It's not something that we talk about. But you're always constantly judging people by what other people say about them. You know, like, what you've heard about somebody is huge. you know, regardless of how that person actually is, if you heard from so-and-so and so-and-so that they're, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, name your sin, then that person is automatically taken down a notch in your esteem.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I heard when I was in South Carolina, I heard stories about, someone would have gotten their fiancé an engagement ring and mm-hmm. or a piece of jewelry for their wife or something like that, and the wife or the fiancé would return it and get something different because it didn't make the right statement, right? And if what we're thinking about is, right, yeah, if what we're thinking about is how we make a statement with even just our physical appearance, let alone our behavior, mm-hmm. right, that's a huge piece. Well, you know, it's not just about do you go to church, well, which church do you go to, right? Are you going to the right church? Are you going, you know, participating in the right social circle? Are you in the right club or, you know, lunchtime conversation or, you know, whatever that is? Yeah.
Yeah. So appearances are super, super important mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in the South in particular, mm-hmm. Especially if you come from quote unquote old Southern money. Yeah. That it's just another level of consideration there. I'm not from quote unquote old Southern money, so thankfully I missed out on some of that. I think that the shame and honor and the preoccupation with appearances is something that runs really, really deep in the South.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think you'll even see this kind of in Southern Christian cultures, like what happens when there is a scandal in the mm-hmm. family, and that scandal could be a teenage pregnancy,
yeah.
the scandal could be an affair, an interracial relationship, mm-hmm. or a homosexual relationship. Those could all be scandalous here in the South at higher degrees of proportion. And how does the culture and community mm-hmm. respond to that?
Yeah, right. Normally you just don't associate with the scandal because you don't want... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
scandal to touch you or yours.
Yeah. Yes, we even now in our youth group, we had a girl who went to boarding school for a year, and she told me her family thought that she was pregnant, and this was kind of sending her away, like extended members of her family.
Yeah.
So I mean, we had this idea of like that's why someone would do that mm-hmm. is because of to hide
to
the scandal,
yeah.
to hide this thing, or you know, talking with members of the LGBTQ community where. Sometimes, even today, there's a legitimate fear of coming out means mm-hmm. I will be kicked out of my family.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I will no longer be welcome in my immediate family, which is nuts to me. Like, even if you disagree, I would be like, they're still your child or your grandchild.
Still the exact same person that they were, you know, before you knew that.
And I think it's worth, you know, clarifying just to make sure we're all kind of on the same page here, right? This isn't to say that honor shame culture in and of itself is bad, or to say that like guilt culture of, you know, if we want to say of the North, right, is good, right? That's certainly you know, the culture in the North has plenty of its own issues, and there are lots of ways in which honor shame culture can function in a very healthy and helpful way, but by and large we see the ugly side of that, you know, by and large if it's to the point of experiencing it or feeling it, we typically are experiencing it for negative reasons. It's typically you know, this kind of scandal that's getting buried, or this you know, this desire to protect the family name as opposed to care for the person or whatever that might be. That's typically where we see it played out, but that doesn't mean that it's automatically and inherently unhealthy or evil.
Well, I mean, I think that the honor portion of it has a lot of positive things. I don't know that I really see the benefit of the shame portion of that culture, though.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, we can go, I mean, I didn't grow up in an honor shame society, right? So I don't know, and it's not culturally ingrained in me in the same way. I just want to be clear. It's not like, oh, well, all the South is just, you know,
we're not
people,
dogging
right?
on the South right
this
now.
This is just a cultural experience that does exist there, and there are negative sides to it. Just as you could say, there are plenty of negative sides. I mean, not many negative sides to growing up in Ohio, but I'm sure that there are negative sides to growing up in Ohio as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think this really kind of brings up, why are we talking about this? And I think for a couple reasons. One, we work for or attend a church in the South.
Mm-hmm.
And two...
Southwest.
In the Southwest. And two, the effect on South when it comes in terms of Christianity in America is disproportionate to the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that is because if you look at across the board, who attends church more? It's going to be in the South. In this article, he has this really kind of neat graphic of the United States, and there's like color coded of like what states have the highest level of church attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And it very literally is the Confederate States and Utah. And those are the bright, those are in bright green. Everybody else is much lower than that. In fact, the further northeast you get, the less and less it gets. Up into Maine, it's like nobody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here we are. So if that's the case, if we're saying like there's a shame honor culture that we're growing up in, and the majority of Christianity in America is located in these states, it can't help but influence how Christianity is not only perceived, but how it operates everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, it's part of that. So here in the South, Christianity and shame honor culture going hand in hand may not be that big of a deal. Like, maybe we see the natural connection, but if you take Christians in New York or California and they go and try to talk about their faith, it's connected to that shame honor culture other places, and they're just people that aren't interested in following that worldview or being having that be a part of their life. And so because it's connected, they hear, oh, Christianity is the place where if you're LGBTQ, you get kicked out of your families. Mm-hmm. Or Christianity is the place with strong racial divides in communities. So they're hearing the shame aspects of these things that are this baggage attached to this message, even though Christians in California and New York, they don't have that baggage.
Yeah.
Right.
They're just dealing with the baggage that we might have.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to say, like, the positive of the South is it has a high Christian culture attached to it. The negative is sometimes that Christian culture does not override Southern culture.
Right. Well, I like the description that the author made, in that the South is Christ haunted, mm-hmm. not Christ transformed. And I thought that that was really astute.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how you hear that? What does that mean? I mean, someone who grew up in the church in the South, what does that mean for you to be Christ haunted as opposed to Christ transformed?
I'd say it's more an aspect of performative Christianity than anything. I think it, again, appearances being so central to Southern shame honor culture, you know, it's what you do is you do the things that make you appear to fit in with this Christian culture, regardless of what's going on the inside, right? Like, regardless of whether or not you're actually transformed by the message of the gospel, you're going to show up at church on Sunday, you're going to vote in the ways that your culture tells you are in line with the Bible, and you're going to give or withhold judgment along with that as well.
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of this default of like when you walk into a, you know, this Southern culture, there's an assumption that we're just all Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of placed on you at birth. You're born in the South. You're a Christian family. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you haven't gone to church in decades. You're a Christian family.
Yeah.
And that's part of that kind of culture. For me, part of it comes into this idea of like in the South, Christianity is in many ways easy because it's what everybody believes.
The default.
We could talk about it. It's the default. It has no strong challenges internally. And as I've kind of gotten older, I can definitely say if for you Christianity is easy, I think you're doing it wrong. Like, and there are many times in my life I could say, I think I'm doing Christianity wrong.
Sure.
And maybe looking back, because it was just so easy.
Yeah.
Like it cost me nothing to be a follower of Jesus. And when Jesus in scripture is asking us to count the cost, and here in the South, like, nothing.
Yeah.
Or it cost me a lot to not be a follower of Jesus.
Right.
Maybe we're missing something there. And I think that can kind of be part of that that kind of idea of what it means to be Southern in Christianity. That and I like how that image of Christ haunted, where, you know, the image of Jesus is just kind of the specter in your house. Present, kind of, but only in rare occasions, versus it has transformed every aspect of your life. It's just not...
Yeah, yeah. It's like that influence without any of the active aspects of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and part of this is what he's going to go into next, and I think this is really interesting, is this shame honor culture. What happens when somebody in this culture feels, and I can be honest here, there's a lot of negativity in the South, especially against the North. there's a lot of feeling that the Southern culture is judged, ridiculed, and excluded from kind of
Yeah. Well, like, even we make fun of David constantly for being from Ohio.
Sure.
Yeah, so. Like, within this podcast, this episode of the podcast. You
know, right. And I like to think that we're fairly progressive people. Yes.
But let me ask you this, Pastor David. Did you, growing up as a kid in Ohio, really think, like, you know what? Those Southerners are just against me.
Mm.
Or have that as part of your worldview?
Yeah, against me, no. I think, you know, there is an element, you know, particularly when we, you know, study the Civil War, right? There's an element of, well, the South was against the United States and was against what was best for humanity, right? Because from the Northern perspective, we can go round and round on this for sure, but from the
No. We're not going to go round and round on this. From the real human perspective, the North was correct.
Right.
Well, okay. But from the perspective of how it's taught, right? That's a different issue from the actual reality. Okay. But so it's definitely taught from a perspective of the North was all in this for the right and holy and just reasons, which is not completely true, right? There are other reasons the North was in it as well. And the South was absolutely wrong and needed to be taken down and all that stuff, which so that there is an element of, like, the South was threatening the North's way of life, or was threatening, you know, it was threatening the lives of slaves and things like that. But there's an element of, we were right? We were justified in going down, and so we did the dirty work that had to be done to set people free. And there's definitely an element of that that's being taught. But no, it was not a, oh, the South has something against you as an individual, or not even necessarily like people who live in the South today have something against you as an individual. It was all history. It was all past tense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I gave two thoughts about people who live in the South while I was, growing
Oof.
Up.
Ouch.
No, but that's fair, because, but that is not how it works down here. Mm-hmm. I think, like, there's a legitimate, the more Southern you are, the more excluded you feel from the North.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we talked about the Civil War, because that is a major milestone moment that I actually do want to get into here for some of this. Because for this, the more Southern you are, you refer to that war as the War of Northern Aggression.
Sure.
Yes.
And you're seeing this shame, honor, culture at play, because a lot of places in the South, when we're talking about the Civil War, the role of slavery is incredibly diminished.
Yes.
In kind of the reasons for this war. And the veneration of the Confederacy is so increased in an amazing way. And again, I'm Southern, and I blow my mind.
Yeah.
The love and honor put on the Confederacy, it is astounding.
Right? I mean, Sons of Confederate Veterans or whatever? Yeah, there are all of these organizations dedicated to it, you know? And, I mean, in one respect, it's like, okay, yeah, these people, I guess, actually were your ancestors and, you know,
you don't want to admit that they're bad.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Like, so I can understand or empathize with that. But I mean, same, like, it just is mind boggling to me. Like, this is what we want to spend our time, you know, joining organizations over. Like, the Shriners wasn't good enough, you know?
So I'll tell you this. When I went to high school at Robert E. Lee High School, we were the Rebels. That was our mascot.
Sure.
And for a newspaper competition, we went up to Austin, state capitol, and I toured the Capitol building here in the state. In the state capitol, and this was the late 90s, this plaque was in our state capitol. I'm going to read this for you, because this will, I think, give you a good example of what honor, shame culture is connected to Southern culture. This is from the Children of Confederacy, and it says this: "Because we desire to perpetuate in love and honor the heroic deeds of those who enlisted in the Confederate Army and upheld its flag through 4 years of war, we, the Children of the South, have united in an organization called the Children of Confederacy, in which our strength, enthusiasm, and love of justice can exert its influence. We therefore pledge ourselves to pursue pure ideals, to honor our veterans, to study and teach the truths of history, one of the most important of which is that the war between the states was not a rebellion, nor was its underlying cause to sustain slavery, and to always act in a manner that will reflect honor upon our noble and patriotic ancestors." That's in our Capitol building.
Yeah.
I read that. And what's funny is our high school mascot was the Rebels. And they're saying, we are not Rebels.
Yeah.
Right.
We just call ourselves Rebels.
The Robert E. Lee Rebels.
But we're not Rebels. But you can see in that, this idea of, like, we could not be the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
because that would make us bad. We would be not just like the South was wrong on this issue. It's if we're wrong on that issue, then the South is just wrong.
Yeah.
And that's this incapability is there to reconcile those two things. So we had to reinvent the narrative and mm-hmm. say, actually, the South lost because they were outnumbered, not because their cause was wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a very Southern thing too, right? Is when you're challenged on something or you are wrong about something, you don't back out. You dig in, you know, double down on it.
Sure, you get hit and you're going to hit back mm-hmm. harder.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah,
and that flies in the face of Jesus saying, turn the other cheek, love your enemies, bless those who persecute you. That's not part of a Southern shame on our culture.
Right.
Go ahead, Pastor David. I cut you off.
No, I honestly don't remember what I was going to say, so it's fine. That's quality podcasting right there.
But I think part of that, and this is going back to that Civil War moment, and I think this is part of what's really shaping this kind of Southern divide, and obviously there was a whole war fought about these things, is why is this culture so prevalent, and why is kind of these, and for lack of a better word, like racial tension still there?
Mm-hmm.
Is because the South never could reconcile we were wrong on slavery. They could
right.
never say we were wrong. We apologize. We're gonna do efforts to make it right.
Right.
Like right after the war ended, maybe we lost, but then we just enacted vagrancy laws to put slaves mm-hmm. back on the plantations, and then we allowed the Ku Klux Klan to rise mm-hmm. in churches. And then we allowed Jim Crow to rise, and we allowed the civil rights stuff to rise. And so all these things happened because the Southern Christianity had this inability and difficulty to just recognize we were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of this culture, right? This shame on our culture. And so it's no surprise now that we still can't say we're wrong. By the way, that plaque has been removed from the United States Capitol in 2019. When we were fighting over like Confederate statues, which again, for me, I've grown up in the South, it doesn't make any sense to me,
mm-hmm.
but there are a deep-seated belief that this is part of that culture. We cannot be wrong on this because then we're bad and not, we did a bad thing.
Yeah.
And that's such an interesting perspective. And this is shaping Christianity. This is shaping this idea when Christians get hit, they hit back harder and not suffer for the sake of the abuser like mm-hmm. Jesus does on the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that's where this idea of Christianity really hurts our Christian message worldwide, if that makes sense. It's not only this inability to apologize and this we've got to hit back harder.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, as you kind of approach Southern culture?
Does it make sense in that I can see the connection
yes.
between the two? Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There you go.
There's the soundbite. Yeah, I think
yeah.
it's tough for me, coming from the outside, there's so much that's different about Southern culture that it's tough for me to pin down, like, this thing or thing. And so I
want to hear more about that though.
Yeah.
About what's different?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this.
Okay, well, we ask me a question, we can talk about that, but let me finish this thought first. It's tough for me to say with confidence, oh, this is the thing, right? Because I think there are valuable parts of Southern culture. Slavery is not one of them, right? And holding on to holding on to a lie about this is what we talked about last week in the WandaVision episode, right? What are the lies that we tell ourselves? Because it's easier to believe the lie than to face the truth, right? And holding on to a lie that
your ancestors were patriotic,
right? Yeah, that's
yeah.
That's not one of the things that is a gift of Southern culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I see that and I hear that. I don't as directly see the connection between Southern culture and the church, but maybe I just haven't been as immersed in that for as long. I mean, that's just maybe not something that I'm as familiar with at this point.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I think part of maybe why you don't see the connection between Southern culture and the church
is
you didn't go to a Southern church.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in the ELCA, which is not a Southern church.
That's a good point.
Southern ideals and how they work things. In evangelicalism, I went to a more conservative branch of the Lutheran church.
Yeah, and I was not Lutheran at all.
Yeah, there are strong connections between these worldviews.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah,
these things are approached. Because the ELCA, we want to think of like its center is not the South.
No.
Right.
But for a lot of Christianity, the center is Southern organizations and Southern cities. And so they have... And so when we're talking about Christianity as a whole, how it affects the United States, I think they disproportionately... do that. And that's part of it. We think of, he's going to list two examples here, you know, like we think of, he's going to list Franklin Graham after the insurrection. Mm-hmm. Some of the Republican congressmen voted to impeach Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And he compared that to taking 30 pieces of silver from the Democrats. This very religious imagery.
Right. The 30 pieces of silver being what Judas was paid to betray Jesus.
Very religious imagery is tying it into religion, this idea of, like, how could they betray President Trump?
Right.
Now, you as a listener may think that we're wrong or right, but I would say they might think that that is just, like, voting their conscience, how they perceived what President Trump's involvement in those things were. So to compare that to, like, this religious
betrayed Jesus,
is really, you know, again, we got hit. We got to hit back harder. And the other one is from Dave Ramsey, another Christian in the South with a Southern organization. And this article is about kind of this journalist. He wrote a piece on culture at Financial Peace University that was not very flattering. That was pretty scathing, saying like, hey, they're not taking Corona protocols very seriously, especially with their employees. And they're not allowing kind of employees to share their frustration with how they're approaching coronavirus. And the writer of this article sent them an email saying, like, hey, I'd love to get your opinion about this. And Dave Ramsey's organization kind of came back with an incredibly sarcastic and mean-spirited email back to them. And so these are just not the images of somebody who turns the other cheek when struck. These are the images of, I've been hit, I gotta hit back harder. Because if I don't, I'm gonna get hit again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not gonna happen, right? This is this, that would be shameful on me, my culture, my people, this tribe that I'm a part of. We gotta hit back harder. And so I think that this is all tied into this idea of this culture. So the question, I guess, really for us, as a member of a church in Texas, and even though the ELCA may not have the same kind of shame culture baggage on a national scale, it's members at our church do.
Come from that culture.
So whether they know it or not, they walk into our church on Sunday morning carrying that with them. And I'm from the South. I think there's beautiful things about Southern culture. There's a high level of hospitality. There can be a high level of like, you look at a, you know, hurricane happening in Texas, it's like the most beautiful, haunting images of people coming together to support and care for their community. It's powerful. So, you know, here we are. I know we're towards the end of this podcast. I don't want to think this, like, it is just a South poop fest. You know, like, I live here, and I think it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But this is undeniably part of that.
Yeah.
And so how does the church, or how do we separate the shame honor culture from American Christianity, or should we, or how do we redeem it?
Well, I think, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking one of my favorite things about the South is a very high, like, sense of community, right? And a sense of self-sacrifice for your community. And I think that that actually plays in to the sort of us versus them mentality, where, you know, we get very, very defensive and aggressive because everybody else is against us because it's our community.
So there's a high level of tribalism here in the South. And that tribe is can exist. It exists all the way from Virginia to the Texas-Louisiana border.
That's exactly right. And then it disappears. But actually, there's some really fascinating stuff out there about how the South was disproportionately settled by disenfranchised Scottish Klansmen after that war that I can't remember the name of. So you can look it up on Google, or you can watch Outlander. I think that's where a lot of that comes from, is, you know, you bring that Scottish clan mentality into this kind of thing, and it's very, you know, community based, very aggressive, defend your honor, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's really part of it. Well, for me, I think it's a reminder, the need to make sure we do apologize when we get things wrong. And I know here in the South now, there's this mindset of like, why should I have to apologize for things people did 200 years ago?
Yeah.
And my response is, because they never did. Like, yeah. they as a society didn't. So now it's up to us to make those amends, even if they're verbal, for them. And I think that that's part of that. Like, as a church community, we need to say, we got things wrong. And we need to model, like, about healthy reconciliation comes when we say, we got things wrong. And I still am loved and cared for by Jesus, even when I get things wrong.
Yeah.
And not have this you know, subtext be, you are loved and cared for by Jesus when you get things right.
Yeah.
And so, you know... And again, I think the ELCA does a good job of that, because we have such a high theology of grace attached to our worship and how we talk about Jesus. But here in the South, that sometimes we kind of play lip service to that, but it doesn't actually permeate our hearts.
Yep.
And so the church needs to do a better job of apologizing and a better job of actually modeling who Jesus is in our communities. And... we already are doing, I think, in the South, a pretty good job of care for community, sacrifice for those, especially in times of crisis. But part of that means when we're struck, how do we turn the other cheek and not fight back harder?
Yeah.
And that is much, obviously it's hard, because here, Jesus said it 2,000 years ago, and here we are, every part of our world doesn't quite get it.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the church standard, is how do we model that? Any thoughts, Pastor David? Wrap us up.
I think that's good. Yeah, there's a story that's sticking out to me, and in fact, you might be able to help me track it down more than I'm doing off the top of my head here. But David and Saul, right? King David and soon to be King David and King Saul are in this big battle for power, and David finally wins, and Saul is killed, and everybody dies, and David says, "Well, is anybody from Saul's family left?" And the only person that's left is like a nephew or a somehow he's descended from Saul, and he's lame and isn't able to walk for himself. And so David takes this child in, and this child eats at David's table for the rest of David's reign, right? This child is raised in the court. And, you know, from one sense, you know, there's this huge bloody battle, and for sure, we, you know, that's not the part of the story we necessarily want to emulate. But this idea to say, like, this was my enemy. This was my enemy who was threatening my ability to be on the throne, and I'm going to willingly care for one of their descendants, not only care for one of their descendants, but a descendant who could potentially rise a challenge against me, right? Because he has a bloodline to this previous throne, right? And David does not. And so, you know, how are we willing to risk our own power, risk our own authority in order to care for others, even those who have hurt us, because we're aware that the story of God is calling us to something greater than just being right, and or than to just serve vengeance on those around us.
Yeah, and I think that's the question, I guess, for all of us. How do we take that into our culture, right? How do we take that into our Southern families, our Southern churches, our Southern places of businesses and schools, and say, like, this is what the gospel is truly about. And this isn't about getting rid of shame on our culture, because like we mentioned, Israel was like this, Asia is like this,
we're not getting rid of it.
So the culture Jesus grew up in, this was there, but how do we transcend it for the sake of the gospel? How does it become less important than the message of Jesus? And I think that's where it really gets difficult, but I think it only happens by us practicing it and making Christianity hard instead of easy.
Yeah.
So, and that's not very fun, right? Like, nobody wants, like, hey, my life got way harder when I started falling for Jesus. It's not exactly a, you don't put that on a billboard. You know, like
dare to think for yourself.
Or a bumper sticker. Yeah. Yes. Dare to think for yourself.
Your life follow way Jesus
and life gets harder. Yes. As it gets easier in many ways, right? Like as things get better, they things also get more difficult because you're dying to parts of yourself. Yeah. Well, there you go. Southern shame culture.
There you go. Ta-da.
Well, if you like what you heard, where can you find
us? Hey, if you like this episode or any of our other episodes, be sure to check all of the Beyond Sunday podcast at beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can find this episode and all of your favorite hours of our conversations on Apple iTunes or on Google Play or on Spotify. Be sure to share us with friends and family from whatever part of the country they are in. South, North, Southwest, even, you know, across borders. We're a transnational podcast. Wherever you have access to the internet, you can find the dulcet tones of Beyond Sunday Podcast.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.